I can't get no satisfaction. Doesn't sound quite as cool when I say it. That's a bit of a classic. In fact, it was voted number two in the Rolling Stone magazine top 500 songs of all time a while ago. It expresses something basic to the human race, this wanting to find meaning in satisfaction, deep satisfaction, like a rest for your heart, where you're really satisfied. And that meaning. But as the song says, it's not very easy over and over again. I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction. And that song could just about have been written a couple of thousand years ago by the teacher of Ecclesiastes, the passage that Dave read to us. The teacher was on the same search for satisfaction and in some ways came to very similar results. Last week, David Thompson began to introduce us to the teacher. We're going to meet him again. So it's verse 12, page 662 of these blue Bibles. You got them there. Page 662, that first reading. Meet the teacher again. Verse 12, where it says, wisdom is meaningless. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. So with that, and the picture in the rest of the passage, it seems the teacher is either this guy, King Solomon, well, I don't know if he really looked like that, but it's a good picture. King Solomon, who's the great, one of the great kings of the Old Testament, or either him or someone years after Solomon who kind of took on the character of Solomon, but kind of even bigger, almost like a super Solomon, which I think is quite likely. And why that is, why that's important, sorry, that it's Solomon or super Solomon, is because of the nature of the search that he takes on. And the teacher's about to undertake this search, and Solomon, or even more, a super Solomon, is fully equipped for this search in the way that very few people are. So let's have a look at the search. Verse 13, he tells us about the search that he undertakes from verse 13. I applied my mind to study and explore by wisdom all that's done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, are chasing after the wind. What's crooked cannot be straightened. What's lacking cannot be counted. It's not a very cheery summary he gives us. But you see the point. He wants to search out all that's done, to investigate and explore everything that's done, to find out what it means, what it's good for people to do, where satisfaction might come from, in all the things we do under the heavens or under the sun, as he also says. And something we'll see throughout the book of Ecclesiastes is teacher doesn't do things by halves. So it is with a search. Each area of life that he searches, that we heard about, each one he throws himself in the whole lot. He goes the whole way. He really commits to this search with his whole self. But also, as he asks questions about the results of his search, he doesn't do that by halves either. He is brutally, scathingly realistic. He will not accept easy answers, and he pushes for absolute honesty and realism. He's uncomfortably realistic. We'll see that constantly. So we're going to have a look now at this search, and then after the search, we're going to have a look at his verdict on the results, and then at the way forward that he kind of starts to paint. So first of all, search, verdict, way forward. First of all, the search. He searches for meaning and satisfaction pretty much in two areas, but one of those two kind of has two bits to it, so, but you see what I mean. Firstly, he searches for meaning through wisdom. Look at verse 16 with me. Verse 16 of chapter 1. I should have said, verse 16 of chapter 1. I said to myself, look, I've increased in wisdom more than anyone who's ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. So he's got a lot of wisdom here. He clearly had great gifts of wisdom and of knowledge as well. So it's not just wisdom, it's practical, useful wisdom and knowledge and truths about stuff in the world. And verse 17, he applied himself to understanding wisdom. So to using it, to making the most of it. And also understanding madness and folly. Getting his head around what's wise, what's not wise, and how wisdom provides answers to our big questions. That's the first part of his search. And frankly, wisdom and knowledge can be wonderful like that, can't they? Wisdom and knowledge seem to promise an answer to all our problems. How often do you hear someone say something like, well, one day we'll work this issue out, and then we'll be right. Hear that? One day we'll find the answer to this, and then we'll have everything in order. I hear that often. For many people, this becomes the answer. I know a young man from this church who became sort of disaffected with his understanding of Christianity, and this was his answer. He basically took up learning as his answer. Philosophy, reading, ideas and concepts, wisdom and knowledge, and he was sure that that's where he would find the answers to life. And I've often thought that sort of thing myself. And fair enough in one way. Wisdom and knowledge are very good things, even essential things to grow and develop in. But look at what the teacher found at the end of verse 17. Pick it up at the end of verse 17. But I learnt that this, too, is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow, the more knowledge, the more grief. So you can read and read and learn and amass wisdom and knowledge and then find that it just raises more and more questions and more different issues. And so often wisdom and knowledge can lead to despair. Have you ever noticed how many very, very sad people are also very, very intelligent? Notice that? Now that statue of the thinker up there, you look closely, he doesn't look very happy. And it's surprising to learn how many philosophers who've been radically honest and realistic in their determination to think about the meaning of life, how many of them have been intolerably unhappy and come to very, very grim conclusions. The more wisdom, the more sorrow. Well, there's the start of his search, wisdom. You'll come back to wisdom later, but next part of the search is pleasure. Pleasure. The teacher throws himself into this one just as completely as he did into the wisdom one. Look at chapter 2, verse 1, if you dare. M rating. So here he's outlining the start of this part of the search. Have a listen. Chapter 2, verse 1. I said to myself, come now, I'll test you with pleasure to find out what is good. That also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. What does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens in the few days of their lives. So he has a go at wine, at drinking. Notice in verse 3, though, he says his mind is still guiding him with wisdom. Sometimes when people say that and they're having a go at drinking, I don't believe them, but I guess he's telling the truth. But this is an intentional experiment in drinking too much. Dangerous business. But he moves to more substantial areas of pleasure next. Achievement and acquisition. He moves into the pleasures of achievement and acquisition. So first of all, achievement, verses 4 to 6. He undertakes serious building projects. He's like a tycoon building houses and vineyards. You heard it as Dave read it before. He's creating both buildings, beautiful big buildings, and green areas with parks and gardens. So he's kind of like a mix of a tycoon and sort of a conservationist, creating these green areas as well. He's got fruit trees and water reserves. He's creating beauty and majesty. He's seeing projects through from the beginning as he seeks to build them through to the end when they're completed. That wonderful sense of achievement when you complete a project. I remember when we were making an album with my band, seeing that thing through from the start of the recording process to when you have the CD in your hand at the end. Well, it was back in the days of CDs. And when you had the CD in your hand, there's just something beautiful about that process and the achievement of finishing something. I remember the Kiwi band Betcha Dupa, who were headed by Liam Finn. They've got a song which is called My Song, and Liam wrote in it, I wrote it in days, now it's going to stay forever. This idea of he's achieved, he's written this song, he's written it in days, and now it's going to last. That pleasure of achievement. That's what the teacher has. But not just achievement. Also, he has the pleasure of acquisition, of acquiring things, getting things. Verses 7 to 9, he acquires all kinds of things here. Slaves, effectively a workforce, verse 7, and herds and flocks as well, like the richest Canterbury farmer. And then verse 8, he builds a fortune. See, there's silver and gold, more than you could shake a stick at. It's like the safety net in the bank. He's acquiring riches that are going to be, you know, he's got that in the bank. He's safe. He's got all the silver and gold. And then it says he's the treasure of kings and provinces. Now, that word for treasure there is kind of a word for a special treasure. Kind of like, I think maybe some special acquisitions. Maybe he's like a collector of great artworks or something. The kind of treasures of kings. He's collecting those kind of special treasures as well. And he acquires singers, as you would, of course, and a harem, or harem, however you say it. Now, literally the words that are translated here and there, you see there's a wee footnote in your Bible. It says they're hard to translate. Very possibly, one of the most likely meanings, I think, is, forgive this, but I think is abundant breasts. So he's kind of made a graphic image of a whole bunch of women in a very sexualized way. Yeah, so it's a fairly intense picture. But I just, with that, did you notice this? There's a harem, wine, singers, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. He has really taken this pleasure search very seriously. And he's like a Donald Trump, Hugh Hefner, and Mick Jagger all rolled together, which is a pretty horrible picture if you actually know those guys and think about it. But you get the point. He's really, really taken it seriously. There's his search. And then again, verse 9, he says he's become greater in these things than anyone. He left no stone unturned in his search for meaning and for satisfaction in these things. In wisdom, through pleasure and achievement and acquisition, sex, drugs and rock and roll even, he's left no stone unturned. That's his search. So now we turn to the verdict from his search. What he finds. Well, he starts off where he finished. He gives a verdict on pleasure, first of all. Pleasure through achievement and acquisition. And starts in verse 10. Have a look with me. Chapter 2, verse 10. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Firstly, he's summarizing how full his search was. Again, he really embraced his search for pleasure, as we saw. He denied himself nothing he wanted, went with all his natural inclinations, all his desires. He let himself have what his heart desired. And, see there, he got satisfaction in his toil. He had delight in it. He enjoyed it. It was his reward, his satisfaction in his toil. He took delight in his toil, that was his reward. It's like the feeling I was talking about when we finished our album, that kind of satisfaction of finishing something, that reward. So he had that for a moment. But then, verse 11. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done, what I toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Literally, where it says, when I surveyed, the language is of sort of turning and looking. He turned again and he looked. He'd been enjoying his achievement, his pleasures. He'd been looking, yeah, that's good. But then he sort of steps back and gets a wider view, takes more in. Do you know that feeling sometimes when you step back from what you're doing? It's good, but you step back and you take in a wider view, you force yourself to be honest about what it really means, and suddenly your heart sinks into your stomach. What is it actually that I've achieved? Or that pleasure that I was looking forward to, really looking forward to, the thing that was going to make everything okay because I had that. Maybe it was food or a holiday. Maybe it was sex. Maybe it was a movie. Maybe it was a concert. And it's good. And then it's over. It wasn't quite the fulfillment you were looking for. And then you have to go looking again. David Robinson is a basketballer. He was one of the greats. He was a member of the first Dream Team, which is sort of one of the greatest teams ever, really. He's an All-Star, NBA All-Star, League MVP. He was a winner of a number of NBA championships. But even after he won the championships, he realized he still kind of felt empty, and he said this: we'd start a new season, and I'd have to reprove myself over and over again. It was never enough. It was like he was on a big treadmill that wasn't actually going anywhere. See, when he stepped back, took a wider view, and then... some of the stories that we tell are interesting. You look at the stories that are told in our movies and TV and stuff, because they kind of explore this idea. There's a show called Satisfaction. First season was last year, I think. I haven't seen any of the shows yet, so... caveat, I might be wrong, but from reading the summaries, it tells me it's about an investment banker with a great life, but whose marriage is falling apart. And he's trying to work out why he's got everything, his marriage falling apart. But the summary that caught my eye was this: the drama series looks to answer the question of what to do when having it all is not enough. When having it all is not enough. Just what the teacher found. And the same idea is expressed powerfully by this guy, Jim Carrey. He's one of the most successful movie stars of the last couple of decades. He's got an enormous amount of money, got paid $10 million just for one film, and that was just the one I found out about quite some time ago. He's probably got paid more for others. He's got all the cliche things. He's got houses, private jet, holiday houses in all the right places. And the thing that's really cool about Jim Carrey is he's gotten all this by making people laugh. That's what he does. He makes people laugh. That's how he's gotten all this money. He's a veritable Super Solomon of our time, I think. But he said this: I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so that they can see that it's not the answer. Do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see it's not the answer, said Jim Carrey. You're hearing a theme here. To put it in the words of the teacher again, in the end of verse 11, for all his pleasures and his achievements, nothing was gained under the sun. And he goes on in his verdict to talk of wisdom and folly. Surely that's got a little bit more to offer. Verse 12 to 16, he talks about that. He starts by saying, indeed, in his search he found wisdom is better than being a fool. It's good to be wise. It's like having eyes in your head. That's a good thing. But there's a problem. See, just like with pleasure and achievement, when you step back, the gloss fades. The end of verse 14, there's this big but at the end of it. But I came to realize, what does he realize? Well, verse 16 sums it up with bitter irony. The wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. And why? End of the verse. Like the fool, the wise too must die. Bottom line, you could be the smartest person in the world, smarter than the smartest scientist, wiser than the wisest thinker, geekier than the geekiest geek, and still in 100 years from now you'd be dead. Just as dead as every punk fool. Isaac Newton, Albert Einstein, dead. Plato, Aristotle, St. Augustine, Blaise Pascal, Rene Descartes, Leonardo da Vinci, Ernest Rutherford, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, dead. 100 years from now, your wisdom, your intelligence, your greatness will gain you nothing. Death is actually the element that ultimately robs life of its meaning and makes everything temporary. And it will keep coming up throughout Ecclesiastes with relentless force, because the teacher, in his bloody-mindedness, will not let us ignore it. Even though we so often try to ignore death and put it out of our minds because it makes life easier that way, he will not let us, because he will make us face reality by keeping on looking at it. For now, he continues with his verdict with that in mind. Death's in the background. And he says in verses 17 to 23, he talks about one of the bitternesses of death. Whatever you might achieve, you can't control what happens to it. You can't control the people who are going to take over what you've done. Verse 19, who knows whether they'll be wise or foolish? They might blow it all, like a celebrity kid who blows the family fortune. There's nothing you can do about it, because you'll be dead. And verse 22 to 23, all the anxiety, all the worry, all the sleepless nights you put into building your empire, your fortune, or your greatness, or your family, or your whatever it is, it can all be squandered and there's nothing you can do about it. And he finishes at the end of 23, this too is meaningless. Have I made you feel excited? Great. Now, it's not my fault, it's the teacher's. But it's the teacher's because he's being so powerfully honest. And he moves then to the way forward. To be honest, and you might not be surprised about this, it's a bit of an empty feeling way forward. Look at verse 24 to 26 again. Person can do nothing better than to eat, drink, and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I say, is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness, but to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, chasing after the wind. Sounds kind of good. Sounds kind of good to start with. Like, these gifts can be received, and maybe there's some real good in them. And there kind of is. But here's the problem. All this comes at the end of a search where he had all these things in abundance. You notice that, these things he lists? He had wisdom. He had knowledge. He had food and drink. He had happiness, because the word for happiness is exactly the same as the word for pleasure. He had all of those things and more of them than any of you or I are ever going to have. But he still found it meaningless. Why? Aren't they good things? Yes, they are, but here's the thing. Throughout his search, he was looking intentionally, did you notice, under the sun. Came up over and again, under the sun, under the sun. 7 times in the passage it says that. What does it mean to look under the sun? Well, throughout Ecclesiastes, you see the teacher's looking at the world under the sun, kind of as it is, in front of your eyeballs, with nothing else taken into account, particularly without anything God has said taken into account. And when you look at the world under the sun in that way, these gifts, pleasure, achievement, wisdom, they become very, very important. Very important. At this point, David Thompson's bubble illustration from last week becomes very, very helpful for us. See, a bubble is a beautiful thing. It's pretty, it's delicate, it's amazing, it reflects cool colors, it's a beautiful thing, it's wonderful to behold. And each of these gifts, our pleasure, our ability to achieve, our wisdom and our knowledge, they're each like a bubble. They're beautiful, they're wonderful, they can be exhilarating. But if you press them too hard, if you put the full weight of your need for meaning upon them, they pop and they become empty. They slip through your fingers. They're like a vapor. See, bubbles aren't made for that kind of pressure. It's not what they're for. And this is what happens to the teacher. As he steps back, well, he asks for more from these things than they're designed for. He's looking for meaning from them. He's looking for purpose from them. That's not what they're for. They're bubbles. They're not foundation stones to build your life on. They're bubbles. And so they pop. And they become empty and meaningless. The meaning sort of falls out of them when he puts this pressure on them. They pop. And our problem as humans, is we have to build our lives on something. We've got no choice. We just automatically do it. I do it, you do it. What do you build your life on? Where are you looking for your deepest satisfaction, your meaning, your purpose, your real rest? Rest for your soul. Where are you looking? You'll be looking for it somewhere. Please don't kid yourself. Oh, I don't look for that. I just get on with it. You look for it. Come on. Is it your study? Is it a relationship? Is it work, a business, a project? Is it enjoyment of nature or of the good things? Family? Where is it some good thing that you're putting everything into? Don't you find when you do that it's like a bubble? So beautiful, it's so captivating. But then when you press it too hard, it pops, vaporizes, the meaning falls out of it. These things can be beautiful and they're real things. But you need to find your meaning and your purpose, your hope in something that can actually bear the weight. Something, someone bigger than death. And good news, the good news the teacher doesn't actually quite get to, is there really is someone that can take that kind of weight. The one who gives these gifts in the first place. But more on that next time. Jim Carrey said, "I wish everyone could get rich and famous and get everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that's not the answer." The Rolling Stones said, "I can't get no satisfaction." St. Augustine, great Christian thinker, who knew the one who was the ultimate answer to the teacher's search, said this, "You made us for yourself, and our hearts find no peace until they rest in you." And someone else that he was talking about said this, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Let me pray. Lord Jesus, help us to find rest where it is, to find satisfaction where it is, to not make these gifts that we're given into things that they can't be, our meaning and our purpose. Help us to find our peace, our rest in you. Amen.